I'm pleased that what I'm sharing this morning dovetails quite nicely with what Nikki kind of started when she was talking about the race. I just want to start with a quick video clip. Thank you, Matt.
Have any quarrelling between you and me, or between your husband and mine, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before ye? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left.
Thank you, Hannah. So Abraham is greatly blessed by the Lord. He's become enormously wealthy and employs hundreds of people on the payroll. He's got flocks and cattle. And during this period, livestock was a wealth to them. They could use the livestock for making tents, for food, for trading goods and services. It's quite a valuable commodity. But we also read, interestingly, that a lot of this has rubbed off onto Lot, because Lot has also become very wealthy. And he's got people and cattle and sheep and goats. And if we can go to the next slide, a problem has arisen. They've now got so many animals that the area where they are can't support both of them, and quarrelling breaks out between the herdsmen. It would have probably been better, because we read they were surrounded by the Canaanites and the Perizzites, who were hostile to them. They should actually have pulled together and worked together. But they've decided, or Abraham's decided, the best thing to do is to separate. So Abraham allows Lot to have the first choice of where he wants to resettle. Now, being the older of the two, he had every right just to say to Lot, "You go over there." He could have done that, and Lot would have had to have obeyed that. But Abraham's put himself in quite a vulnerable position, and he could easily be left with the least favourable share. So, what does Lot do? The next slide. And, I'm reading this bit. Try Linda's glasses. I hope that's going to work. Genesis 10 to 13. 13, 10, 13. Right. Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, where he'd just been, toward Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out towards the east. The two men parted company. Abraham lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. So he chose the best bit for himself. He had no regard for the feelings or the needs of Uncle Abraham. And what he's done, he's revealed something about his character. He's motivated by greed and instant gratification. But apart from that, he's also chosen to live right near Sodom, a place renowned for its evil and wickedness. What may appear to be the best choice isn't always the right choice. And then we read in chapter 14 that Lot has got himself in a little bit of a pickle. So we can have the next slide. What's happened? Some of the kings, the small kings in the area, minor kings, have got together to go and attack Sodom, because the king of Sodom decided to stop paying tribute to this king Kedorlaomer. I think that's how you pronounce it. They've been paying tribute for years, and he decided to stop doing it. So these kings get together, teach them a lesson, attack them. And unfortunately for Lot, he finds himself on the losing side, and he's taken away as spoils of war, along with his family and his people and his possessions. But somebody escapes and gets word to Abraham, who's not that far away, and says what's happened. So Abraham gets together 318 of his men, shows how big his business is, and creates a little army with them, and they go and fight the bad guys, and Lot is freed and released and brought back. Now, we would think at this point Lot has maybe learnt his lesson, and that, of course, you know, he'll go and stay back with Uncle Abraham in that area. But no, he returns to Sodom, but this time, even worse, he's not camping outside with his herds, he moves inside the city, a choice that was to set the scene for the rest of his life. So, to put it mildly, Sodom and Gomorrah didn't exactly nurture healthy traditional family values. Chapter 18, we read that God decides to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And via a couple of angels, he discusses this plan with Abraham. Now, Abraham pleads for those cities, and it ends. The pleading ends up, if there's only 10 righteous people in the city, will you spare it? And God said, yeah, of course I would, for 10 people. Well, evidently, there weren't 10 righteous people, because God decides he's going to zap Sodom and Gomorrah anyway. So the angels go ahead into Sodom. And then we read in Genesis 19 that when they arrive in Sodom, they find Lot sitting at the city gates. Now, that tells us quite a lot about what's happened to Lot, because to be sitting at the city gate meant that you had some position of power and authority in the city. The city gate was where trade took place. It's where business deals were done. It's where judgments were made in disputes and so on. So it looks likely that Lot has kind of got himself in on the with the in crowd in Sodom. And Lot invites these two angels to come and stay with him at his house, to which they agree. So the next slide. There we are. Later that evening, a mob comes bashing on the door and demands that Lot sends out the two visitors so that they can have sex with them. Now, this isn't the stuff they teach in Sunday schools, but it's there, and it goes to show just how morals had slipped to an all-time low in Sodom. So Lot pleads with the men, with the mob, please don't touch these men. Tell you what, you can have my daughters instead. Have you daughters? You know, what father would give his two daughters to a mob of sex-crazed maniacs? You just wouldn't do that. And maybe this reveals just how much he'd been tainted by life in Sodom, or how little he regarded his daughters. Or was it a ploy because he knew they were homosexual? I don't know, but he just wouldn't do that. So the mob refused his very kind offer, so the angels strike the whole mob blind and pull Lot back in and say, is there anybody in this town that you want to take out with you? And he says, my sons-in-laws who are due to be wed to his two daughters. So he goes and speaks to them, but they think he's just joking and having a laugh. So the angels drag Lot and his wife and his two daughters out with the strict instructions, don't look back. But as we all know, next slide, there we are. As we all know, Lot's wife looked back and she was turned into a pillar of salt. I'm not even going to go there. That's probably another preach for another day. But she was turned into a pillar of salt. And maybe she was looking back at the life she'd left behind. Maybe she had regrets, comfortable Sodom. She'd compromised so much. But whatever the reason, she was disobedient to a direct command she'd been given. Don't look back. So, well, we know this isn't going to end well for Lot. But surely at this point, he'll go back to Uncle Abraham now and learn the error of his ways. So if Trevor could please read Genesis 19:30-38, and it's on the slide.
Lot and his two daughters left Zoar and settled in the mountains, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar. He and his two daughters lived in a cave. One day the elder daughter said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is no man round here to give us children, as is the custom over all the earth. Let's get our father to drink wine, and then sleep with him, and preserve our family line through our father." That night, they got their father to drink wine, and the elder daughter went in and slept with him. He was not aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. The next day, the elder daughter said to the younger, "Last night I slept with my father. Let's get him to drink wine again tonight, and you go in and sleep with him, so we can preserve our family line through our father." So they got their father to drink wine that night also, and the younger daughter went in and slept with him. Again, he was not aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. So both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. The elder daughter had a son, and she named him Moab. He's the father of the Moabites of today. The younger daughter also had a son, and she named him Ben-Ammi. He's the father of the Ammonites of today.
Thank you, Trevor. You couldn't make that stuff up, could you? It's incredible. So this is a very sad sequel to the whole story of Lot. From being an enormously wealthy, successful livestock owner, employing people, and probably enjoying a really good life out there on the plains, suddenly he's a widower living in a cave with two desperate daughters trying to preserve their family line through an incestuous act with him. Lot should have found suitable partners for his daughters. That was his responsibility in that culture. His uncle Abraham wasn't that far away. But interestingly, the two tribes that these girls spawned became sworn enemies of Israel. So while Abraham was the founding father of God's chosen people, Lot was the founding father of God's the enemies of God. And here's a fact as well, just throw this one in. The oldest daughter's son was the founder of the Moabite tribe, from which King David's great-grandmother Ruth came from. And Ruth was an ancestor of Jesus through the line of Joseph mentioned in the Gospel of Matthew. So some good came out of it.
Just a bit.
Just a bit, yeah. I'm looking for a grain. Lot had every opportunity to participate in the great vision that God had given to Abraham. But instead, his desire to conform to the world made him and his family the enemies of everything that God wanted to accomplish. He flirted with evil instead of living a life that honoured God. And the end result was suffering for Lot, for his family, his daughters, the whole nation of Israel for many years to come. So what can we learn from Lot's story? If we could have the next slide, please. There's a saying that when we stop making choices in God's direction, all that's left is to make choices in the wrong direction. Now, I've got two envelopes here. Could you please choose an envelope, A or B? Could you open the envelope and see what you've won?
Oh, no, I want the other one now.
Too late, you've started. So Lucy's going to reveal.
I chose the wrong choice. I'm the loser.
Now, she chose the wrong one. What could she have done differently when I said, choose an envelope? But what else could she... Thank you. Ha-ha. Got the clever ones here, that's why they're elders. See, she could have asked me and said, well, what's in that one and what's in that one? And then made her choice. But she blindly went in there, snatched it out my hand, and motivated by greed and instant gratification. She should have... Sorry, Lucy. You know I don't really think that. So, okay. James 1:5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God. I'm not saying I'm God, but you should ask God, who gives generously without finding fault, and it will be given to you. 1 Corinthians 15:33 also says, bad company corrupts good character. And this is what happened with Lot, apparently. And it's really important that we spend time with people who are an influence for good on us. And we should be spending time fellowshipping with each other, not just on a Sunday with tea and coffee, but get together, ring up, what are you doing next week, come round for a barbecue, and we can be good for each other. And I want to finish with Proverbs 2:1-11. I'll attempt to read that with, it's coming up on the screen. Right. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, if you look for it as for silver, search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He's a shield to those whose walk is blameless. He guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart. Knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. And that's what I learned. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Wonderful. What an amazing morning. We're going to break for tea and coffee now, and I would invite you for prayer if you felt touched earlier on during the worship and you felt there was something that you want to be dealing with. Please don't run away without speaking to somebody, and we'd love the opportunity to pray for you to be filled with the Holy Spirit. So grab one of us and we will pray for you. And I think that's it, really. And what a wonderful morning. And bless you. Have a fantastic week. And we'll see you next week, I think.